kept locked. It was the garage.
My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving.
That's a running car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it. I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes paid for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Welcome to Throwing Wrenches Podcast. This is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott, and this is the auto podcast that can sell a car, or at least one of us can.
When the wife asks, Daryl. I'm surprised the fair Mrs. Scott hasn't asked you to sell a car.
We'll get to that, but I'm going to put the spotlight on you later on. We're going to talk about what you wound up selling, but first and foremost, we got to get down to business, and we'd like to say a quick thank you to the sponsors among the many sponsors who help make this program possible. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to Fort's Toyota of Pekin. You can find them on the web at toyota-pekin.com. Fort's Toyota of Pekin is a family-owned small business located in the heart of central Illinois. Fort's Toyota of Pekin lives the Toyota lifestyle. Beautiful, functional, high-quality cars and trucks that will stand the test of time no matter what your budget is. You can visit them on the web at toyota-pekin.com or stop by Fort's today at 120 Radio City Drive in North Pekin, or as they say, 15 minutes from anywhere. See the friendly professionals selling, servicing, and racing Toyota. Fort's is Toyota to the core. And Eric, I'll let you throw your disclaimer on there.
Yeah, I do work at Fort's Toyota, so if I sound like a shill for Toyota at times, it's probably because I've been immersed in Toyota for 25 years. So.
Yeah, and you actually have some stickers and a nice polo shirt, by the way, with the Fort's logo.
Oh, yeah, thank you. You like that? Yeah, trail team?
So one of those that wicks away moisture.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm an athlete, so you know, I got the Nike anyway.
We're not sponsored by Nike, but if Nike wants to sponsor us.
Absolutely. We can make some Throwing Wrenches Nike shirts.
Right on.
Yeah. All right. We're also sponsored by the KC Law Office, which now has a new web domain. We'll be updating all that on the website because it's now clomorton.com. The KC Law Office has picked up their shingle, and they have moved it over to Morton, Illinois. Actually, Gabe Casey is a Mortonite, and he was a native Morton guy. So this is a perfect fit. So clomorton.com. The KC Law Office is dedicated to an honest practice of law and will fight to get you the result you deserve. No matter what your legal need, contact Gabe Casey at the KC Law Office. Call or click to discuss your claim for free or charge. KC Law Office, a modern legal practice dedicated to solving your legal issue. Also, I'm going to throw it in as a bonus because this is also part of Gabe's little thing going on right now. He's got 309arena.com, as in like sports arena, 309 arena. We're in the 309 if you don't know, yo.
That's the area code.
Yo. the 309.
You're so not hip.
No,
no. I just want to throw that out there.
Dude, no.
Never again.
No. I may have to scrub that, but I won't because I'm lazy. Anyway, 309arena.com gets you to the latest esports facility here in central Illinois. Gabe's rolling that out. What'd he spend, like $100,000 in PCs and monitors?
$2 billion. It was $2 billion.
$2 billion.
Yeah.
Millions. He spent millions of dollars.
It's got the IBM Blue Waters processor going on. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's great.
Yeah. Anyway, so check that out. Also follow it on Instagram at 309arena. Looks to be pretty cool. So I'm interested to see. I'm kind of hoping I can just go there and get good internet. Maybe we can do the show from there, Daryl.
We might be able to.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But you know what? Kudos to him and best of luck in his new ventures there. Morton is a really, really cool town, and it's nice to see another addition to their downtown.
And when
area.
The kids can't be in sports anymore, they can still do arena sports.
There you go.
Online. Anyway. Also, the show is sponsored by our Patreon subscribers.
And we have some swag coming.
We do. I actually whipped up a little swag. I don't know what inspired me. You know what it was? My wife went out of town, and I wasn't feeling well on Sunday, and I literally sat at the kitchen table for like 10 hours.
With your crayons and
pretty much,
colored
my crayons and my colored pencils. I'm like, I can draw a picture. So
it looks awesome. I will vouch for his artistic abilities.
Only because I chose one of Daryl's cars, trust me.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's phenomenal. Great.
Really big things coming.
Yeah.
If you're a Patreon subscriber, you also get a bonus podcast, not just a cheesy sticker of a 1969 Volvo. You're going to get an hour of pre-show where Daryl and I talk about the trials and tribulations of auto theft. What else we talk about in the pre-show?
$3 car wash.
The $3 car wash.
Car wash epidemic.
Yes, yeah. Believe me, that's not going to be in this show tonight. So if you want to listen to something extra, if you just can't get enough of Daryl and I, there's an extra 58 minutes waiting for you on the other side of the Patreon paywall.
Yeah, we talked about a bunch of stuff. I can't even remember.
Yeah. Feedback, Daryl. I got some feedback. Got a couple things. Mark sent us a link to an electric Chevy S10, which looked pretty cool. We talked a lot about electric last time.
Yeah, it was an all-electric show.
I didn't mean to do that. So I purposely thought maybe we'd just do all carburetors one show, but then I got over that real fast.
It's fine. I would have plenty to say, but that's okay.
I did get some feedback from Brian, who listens to the show regularly while he's doing his rounds at the hospital. And he said that I messed up when we talked about some Rivian stuff with Amazon. We'll get to that later in the show. But he also said he was disappointed when he hears Cars of the Week because he knows the show is ending. And that was, it almost brought a tear to my eye, Daryl. Thanks, Brian. Sorry, the show has to end sometime.
Yeah, but we'll always come back, and we'll always pick something either worse or better for Cars of the Week. So there's that to look forward to. I want to jump in here real quick. I didn't put this in the outline, but a quick shout-out to listener Brad. You can check him out on YouTube. He is on, I believe his name is at Pearson Classics. He just picked up a really cool winter project, and I think he's getting the whole family involved in that. It's a, I believe it's an 81 Trans Am.
Ooh.
So it's kind of like Smoking the Bandit, but it's got that cooler urethane nose on it that they came out with in 79, I believe. It's a cool, like a brown, metallic, beautiful 70s kind of root beer color. It's a cool, untouched original car. So I'll probably put a link up and share that video. He's going to be working on that, and kudos to him. I know a lot of folks have chimed in and said, "Hey, you and Eric buy an awful lot of junk, and you keep bringing stuff home. You don't sell anything." Well, Eric finally did, and again, preview. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But there's other people right now that are pulling stuff home, and I'll tell you what: if you aren't going on vacation this year, stuff's all messed up. You're not spending the money on whatever you thought you were going to spend the money on. Bring home an old car.
Yeah.
And throw all kinds of time and effort and money into it.
It's never been easier, I think, to get parts for old cars, right? I mean, with the internet, what you must have done 10 years ago to get parts for old cars.
Swap meets, man.
Had to be a nightmare compared to today.
Yeah, you had to go to all these little stupid swap meets and haggle with people. And, where are you going to find another one? Well, now, if somebody says that, I'm like, hold on. And I pull my phone out and I'm like,
There's a guy in Des Moines.
It's the shipped, called U-Ship and it's all set up.
Yeah.
So, no, kudos to folks like Brad who are just continuing to do what they do. Car folks, car and truck folks out there, keep bringing those projects home because we need something to do in these long Midwestern winters.
Yeah. So. All right, so now we go to the spot of the show where Daryl and I get to, like, glad hand each other and tell you all about each other. Oh. So I'm going to tell you about the awesome Daryl Scott. Mm. This nearly famous radio jack – sorry, let's start over. This nearly famous radio jock from Chicago. He just laughs at that, so I could stop right now. That's Daryl Scott.
No,
this nearly famous radio jock from Chicago is taking his show on the road. Well, kind of the road. Really, it's more like the garage and – really not so much radio anymore. No, He's just for here for your podcast enjoyment. Thank God this guy reads Hemming Motor News. He can carry the show for me with his radio and car chops, which I don't have.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You got some good humor chops there, too. Mm-hmm. I stopped buying Hemmings. I just get them from my people in my car club because I'm cheap. And when they throw them out, they're like, hey, you want this? Sure.
Yeah, I'll read it.
Because I can't go to Barnes & Noble anymore. Does that even exist? No, Borders closed.
Yeah, Borders closed. That's what I keep thinking. Dude, I was at Home Decor the day, whatever that store is called. I'm like,
Home Goods?
Yeah. Remember when this used to be an amazing audio video store?
Yeah. Remember going in there for 2 hours and listening to CDs?
And looking at box sets of DVDs.
Oh, man. The good old days, 2007. All right. So our co-host here, Mr. Eric Stahl, is a child of the 70s. He's a youth of the 80s. And my co-host had to round up to the 1990s when he found his next project car. Does that mean that soon he might acquire a 2000s era toy to add to his collection and kind of run through the decades? Ladies and gentlemen, the Walkman turned Discman, Mansman? I don't know.
The
Mr.
Man.
Mr. Eric Stahl.
The man's man, the ladies' man, the man about town.
Did you ever have the Walkman, I'm sorry, the Discman with the little cassette adapter?
Yes, we did. In our 93 Celica in like 1995, we drive to Florida.
Yeah.
We had it sitting right on the dash of the Celica on a Velcro. But every time you hit a bump,
skip.
Did
you ever know anybody that had the little arm, the shock arm?
Oh, no.
There's one guy, he had an old like Delta 88 or something like that. And it was a nice riding car, but even there, he's like, yeah, I figured I wouldn't have to buy the thing to make it not skip.
Yeah.
But he bought this thing almost like a cell phone mount. Remember the old brackets that would like bolt to the floor, screw into the floor?
Oh, yeah. Actually, my Supra has one.
Does it really?
Yeah, for a phone, for a flip phone.
I didn't notice that.
It does.
That's awesome. That car just got infinitely cooler. No, he actually had one of these things that screwed into the floor and actually had like a little mount pad thing. It was Sony. It was a Sony part. But I just like, why don't you just get a nice stereo?
No, man, this is way cheaper.
Like, you're drilling holes in your... Anyways. the good
all
old
right.
days.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share this on all the social media sites. I always joke that I share on Instagram and LinkedIn, but you know what? You'd be surprised where there's people who like to find a decent podcast. So if you have anybody who you think might want to hear it, please share it around. We do appreciate it.
Definitely, definitely. And we'd like to say a quick hat tip and nod, wave, whatever you do, to Steve Brown. Steve Brown, if you recall, was on the show. What was it?
I guess it was 35.
Episode 35, where he talked about the Cannonball Run, kind of the southern route that he did in his 2014 GMC Sierra. And set a record for the transcontinental record from Jacksonville to San Diego.
It was still San Diego, same spot where the traditional ending is, but he started in a different spot in Jacksonville. But that was part of the confusion. People were like, "Is it really Cannonball?" So what did he do? He packed up the van or packed up the truck and decided to start in New York City and do it again.
Yep, he revised some fuel system issues, kind of had some a new fuel pump and a whole bunch of other things. So we need to have him back on the show.
Yeah.
Love that guy. He's great, great company. And if you get a chance to check out not only that show, but also the pre-show, which we were going to put up, I think, Eric, you were talking about.
It is live right now. Okay. So Patreon normally has a gate on it, a pay gate, because of the event of what Steve just did. I open that up. You can go to Patreon, and I think if you click on our homepage and click on the Patreon feed, it'll take you to our feed. And there's a couple free episodes on there. Cool. And now this pre-show with Steve Brown is on there. And actually, I really enjoy that one because we talk about some stuff that we left off the show. Not so much on purpose, but we thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about some unsavory sanitary parts of driving across the country.
Yeah, the logistics, if you will. Yeah. But Steve's a great guy. If you're in Central Illinois, you've probably seen him at one of the Cars and Coffee events over in the Levee District. Fairly active with that this season. And just a great guy. Need to catch up with him. But he actually did that trip, New York to L.A., and we will follow up and kind of see what the official verdict is on the timing.
You know what's cool about him is he could be a complete douche nozzle. You could walk up to him and be like, "Yeah, this is my truck. I did this." And you'd be like, "Yeah, that's really cool. The guy's kind of an idiot, but I really dig what he did." But he's so nice. He's like the nicest guy in the world.
Absolutely. Of everybody I've met in that scene, he's like top dog. I mean, you're okay.
Thanks. Appreciate
but,
that.
Yeah,
I'm a douche nozzle.
Steve's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, speaking of people who are
douche nozzles,
who excel at nozzletry, this a couple of years ago, Hemming's Great Race came through Peoria. Mm. And that's that vintage one where they go, you know, they pick a, I don't know, 1,500 miles or whatever.
Yeah.
It was great. And when I was working in broadcast news, media / whatever, I went
big time radio jock.
I did. Yeah, I was. I did a feature on that, and it was great. Got to meet Corky Coker from Coker Tire and a bunch of other goofballs. But I get there, and like a couple guys were in like a split window Corvette and interviewed them. And there were two retired guys from Texas, and they had all kinds of money. And like, "Yeah, we've always wanted to do this. This is great. We're having the time of our life." Dude in an old Model A Speedster, Model T Speedster. "Yeah, this is great. Here's cool. Here's my time so far, and I'm looking forward to the next leg." And there's these two hipster guys in a little Fiat Multipla, which, you ever see those? It's like a minivan.
No idea.
It's like a, I think it's the same engine as the 500.
What era is this?
Like late 50s, early 60s.
Okay, no, I have no idea what that vehicle
is. It's kind of a shrunken down.
And I'd look it up, but
microbus.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very small, cute little microbus type thing that's a Fiat. And these guys get out, and I'm like, "Oh, that's a cool car. I took some pictures of it. Like, this would be kind of neat little." I was going to put a photo gallery up on the station website.
Sure.
And I'm like, "Hey, I'm from blah, 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 from so-and-so, doing a little feature on this story. Thanks for welcome to Peoria, blah, blah, blah. Would you guys be interested in just talking a little bit about your trip?" And they both look over at each other. Remember the show Nip Tuck?
I never watched it, but I know what you're talking
That's
about.
That's what they look like. They were like so hip. They had like Ray-Bans. They get out of the car like they've been driving through the Sahara Desert, right? They were on like a little 200-mile jaunt that day.
Oh, yeah.
They look at each other. They look at their watch. They take their glasses. They look at each other like, "No."
Oh,
and then they just walked away. And I'm sitting here with like the Marantz recorder and like my little notepad. I'm like, "You bunch of pretentious jerks.
Truckers, you mother truckers."
The only reason I say that is to say Steve Brown's a great guy.
Yeah,
and we love Steve Brown, so we're going to have him back on the show.
Now, the one thing, I know Steve didn't get the record for truck. The truck record still stands. And believe it or not, the big GMC dually from the 19...
Like 82 or 81 or something.
81 movie is actually the truck that was in that movie is the one that had the truck record. and still holds that record by like 11 minutes over Steve, I think.
No kidding.
Is one of the follow-up posts. Now, that could be wrong, but I believe Steve posted that.
Okay. Yeah, I followed some of that, and actually Steve was kind enough to share. He talked about Glimpse, which is an app, GPS tracking app.
Yeah, so he sent us links so we could follow where he's at.
Yeah, we followed him in a lot of time in Pennsylvania, so I think there's tons of road construction and
stuff going on there. Dude, I was pulling for him like, he's not going fast enough.
Yeah.
Dude, the worst part was I went to bed at like midnight on Saturday night. Uh-huh. Did he start on Saturday evening?
Yes.
And he was on like one side of Pennsylvania by midnight. Maybe it was middle of Pennsylvania somewhere at midnight. And when I woke up the next morning, he was just getting through Missouri or something. Like, he was in the middle of Missouri. I'm like, oh, God, I've just slept all night. And he's still, you know.
Still at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we wish him the best because we know Steve, and that's probably not the last run he's going to be doing.
Well, so. I think that if COVID gets locked down again, that'll be a boon for the Cannonballers.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think that's where they'll make – I mean, honestly, to try that again with knowing the way traffic's pretty much normal as far as I'm concerned right now.
So, yeah, and road construction season, quote unquote.
Yeah, still in flux.
Still in effect.
But I know he was trying to avoid, you know, winter. You had to – trying to avoid, you know, Eisenhower Tunnel and all that stuff. And
Sure. No, it's fascinating stuff, and we'll definitely get into the nitty-gritty on his last run here.
Yeah. All right, we'll get him, and we'll get Dean Plumador, we'll get Dustin, we'll get Chris Ruby, we'll get all these guys. One day.
We'll do more shows, Daryl,
is what we should do.
Let's just do a Zoom meeting and have them all. No, I'm just kidding.
That would be entertaining to us.
Just us, anyway. We would enjoy it. You guys, probably not so much. All right, so...
COVID cough, sorry.
That's what people... Yikes. That's what...
Where's my bleach? Can't even joke anymore.
No, I know. So that's what Steve's been up to. Eric, what the heck have you been up to?
I got a couple things, Daryl, and I'm going to... See, and this is the thing where I feel like I just, like, hog the whole show. So I'm going to, like... I need to have, like, fast bullet points. I'm already talking too long.
No, you're fine.
So since the last time we did a show, I went up to Super Day at Autobahn. I don't know if you know this or not, Daryl, but if you buy a brand new Supra, and I believe this is for the 2021 model as well, but in 2020, you got a free NASA race day at a local car club or something like that. So... this one for the Super Club was held at Audubon Country Club. And actually, this is like the third session of Audubon they've had this year.
And for the uninitiated, and I heard of it, but I forgot what it was called. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Audubon Country Club is literally, you've heard of golf country clubs. You've heard of airplane country clubs where there's a runway amongst the houses.
One up in Wisconsin like that.
Yeah, and I think there's one in Chicago too. But there's also Audubon Country Club, which is literally a racetrack that is bordered by fancy garages with living quarters in them. So you can pull your race car out. And there were some Ferraris. There were some high-end Porsches. There was all kinds of cool stuff just parked in the wings of these garages just waiting to be pulled out on the track. I did look up membership, by the way, Daryl. For a cool $40,000, you can get your membership sponsored. And then for, I think, $4,000 or $5,000 a month, you can be a member of the club. That's a club.
$4,000 or $5,000.
A month. Yeah. Anyway. Or you could do a track day like this, which Toyota paid for. It's part of your dues with the car. And I can tell you, I was invited kind of as like a corporate person. I didn't sit there and do the actual course. That was for, you know, people who bought the car. But I watched them do track. Well, actually, they did course time, track time. And when I say course time, it's actually classroom time. Okay. And then more classroom time. And then so they did three sessions of classroom, three course sessions. They did a free session at lunchtime. And
kind of like a Bob Bondurant class or Skip Barber or something like that.
Yeah, like Skip Barber probably. Yeah, yeah. The instructor was amazing, totally cool. The guy, Eric Meyer, who runs the NASA program for the Supra program, he had actually – somehow he'd seen a picture of our Supra, and he reached out to me and said, hey, are you coming to this? I'm like, no, dude. I didn't even know it was happening. Can I still get there? He's like, yeah, come on up. So he invited me up. I went up with a friend, a dealership friend, and we got some video. We got some pictures. I posted pictures. Hopefully we get this video compiled. But I got robbed. I didn't get spend time on the track. I'm not going to get into it. But
there's a story there. But
yeah, there is. I don't even know if that's in the pre-show. I'm not sure we put all that in the pre-show. I think I did put it in the pre-show.
You did.
Tune into the pre-show for that.
Yeah, the pre-show is good.
Yeah. But no, it was good. And I tell you what, man, I could see where you could change your whole auto lifestyle if you got into track racing.
Yeah.
I mean, guys would spend as much on a set of tires every weekend, you know, doing that stuff. Plus track time, which I think a day on that track is going to cost you $350.
I mean,
just to show up on an open day.
How is it set up? Is it just a big oval? Is it a
no? It's a road course.
Okay,
yeah, and it's in different segments. I think they split it in two. But the cool thing about it is they regimented it in like 30-minute blocks. So you'd see almost like a bunch of NASCAR cars running out there for 30 minutes straight. And then at that time, it's shut off. Next thing you know, it's a Porsche club. Next thing you know, it's a Mustang club.
So somebody's running that
the time. Dude, the logistics of this thing have to be insane. So one of the things that happened at the lunchtime, that's why I didn't get to race, is because there was too much time spent on the course, and they literally said, you're off. And because there's not messing around, man. People pay big money to be out there.
Sure, they're waiting in the wings all morning.
Yeah. So
how many cars, how many Supers showed up?
I think there, I would say conservatively 15, but it could have been as many as 18.
That's a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, it was great. I was really shocked. Now, the funny thing to me was I think I had a stereotype image of what the person would be like who was there with the Supra, and I saw a little bit of it, but really I saw everybody. I saw young guys who were into sports cars all the way up to retired guys just having fun with a car. So it was a good mix. And I saw people absorbing it at a different level. Some people are like, it's a day, I'm whatever. And I saw other guys, I mean, me and Mike, the guy I showed up with, we were like raising our hand to answer questions, like, we're not even paying to be here, and we're like learning stuff, you know, about course vision and stuff. I mean, you literally spend one section talking about apex and braking and, you know, turning, and stuff that seems rudimentary, but if you have an instructor telling you, you know, what you're looking for, it changes the way you drive. It was fun.
It was a good way to spend a couple hours.
I'd do it again tomorrow. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Were there any other vehicles there that had any kind of significant mods, or were they pretty much bone stock?
No, there was a couple Supras that were downpipe, tuned, lowered, suspensions, tires, rims, yeah.
So already
some
ready.
Some guys are already doing some stuff with them, so we aren't ahead of the curve. If anything, I felt like, oh, we need to kick up our game a little bit. I mean, we've been sitting on our car for 8 months.
Has it been that long?
But, dude, COVID sucks. It's just this year was not a good year for anything. So,
well, even if you did want to order some mods or you know, have some guy tune it or something, there's no – who's to say that you would be able to get the availability of stuff or get
it really wasn't that. It's just like, were we even going to race this year? So, you know
– that too.
Because Champaign County was the only place in town doing anything. So the COVID year sucked.
It did.
So that's my Autobahn story. And if you want to talk about that, I will tell you this. If anybody wants to sit and jaw or chew the fat about that program and is thinking about having a Supra or owns a Supra, call me up at work. I'll talk to you about it. It was great.
Nice.
And I'll get you in touch with the guys at Toyota who are doing it too. My 1990 Supra, I got some – I tried to attempt to put the body molding back on that was missing on the passenger door. The car looks pretty square. It's definitely a 20-footer.
It's sharp. Eric did bring that over.
Oh,
by the way, the lovely Mrs. Stahl
actually
managed to drive that. And kudos for getting antique plates. Is that the first car you've hung antique plates on?
I almost got them for Red Miss last year, but the gal at the DMV was not a helpful person.
So
Angela ran into a helpful person down Lincoln.
And set it up.
We got extended antique.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, 30-year-old car. So.
Yeah, I mean, and you're not going to be driving it daily year round.
No, it's going to get locked up here pretty quick, I think. But,
yeah. Nice car. I got to see it with the target top off, and it's all its glory. It is a beautiful, clean, almost, dare I say, untouched car.
It's almost a survivor.
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah.
It's a more like burgundy than I thought it would be. And the pictures almost look like purplish.
Yeah.
But it's got a really cool tinge to it. Nice looking car.
Yeah, thank you. And Angela drove up your driveway in reverse without killing it, so that was good.
Yeah, I told Sarah, I'm like, don't watch. Because just go on that.
She's fine. She's driven a stick a million times. So. But anyway, the body side molding was missing. It wasn't missing. It came with the car, and it was missing some clips. I could see the clip holes. So on Toyota...
Color, right? Is it body color?
No, they're gray. They're charcoal.
Okay,
And the car is kind of that maroonish color. But... I went back to parts, and I was able to get the clips for it. The OEM clips are still available. I'm like, all right, this is cool. The back of the weather strip was missing two of the clip holes, but the other three were there. I'm like, all right, I'll get some clips. I'll do some foam tape with the 3M stuff, which you recommended.
Yeah.
And those clips did not fit in there, and I'm just like, oh, man. And that's probably the biggest drag of driving that car right now, because the whole passenger door just looks like it's missing something. So I end up using 3M tape on the whole thing, and right now it looks like it's holding up fine. Every time I walk up to the car, I just want to push on just to make sure they're there.
Yeah, just double check it.
Yeah. But so far, so good. I will let you know by the next episode if those held on there or not.
Yeah. Well, good luck. I know, some of the GM cars I've dealt with in the past, that the trim, all that rubber, what do they call it, like body side molding, is such a pain.
But, dude, if this were like a solid piece of rubber, it'd be fine. The Toyota part was kind of like hollowed out. It's like a C channel.
So
it was like having to layer it.
Yeah.
The 3M tape, which is not good, because now I'm not dealing with one layer having to hold on. I'm dealing with four layers having to hold on. So.
And then, of course, it's got to, if it sticks out too much from the little indent in the panel.
That didn't happen. I was good. I was good there. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah, I've seen that before where you see like a quarter inch gap and a foam tape. You're like, that's a genuine hoopty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then every time you open the door, it starts to rub off or scrub off at the panel in front of it. Yeah. No, we're good there.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. What's the goal with that car? Are you going to just kind of fair weather toy, or are you going to actually autocross that?
No, I don't think I'm autocross. I will tell you this. It does not have hub-centric wheels, I found out. I brought them back in the shop to rebalance them because I thought something's not right.
You got a little shimmy?
Yeah, and so we took the rims off, and they're not hub-centric. They're held on by the lug nuts, these centering lug nuts, and I am not a fan of that.
Are you going to can them?
I think I'm going to try and find factory spec wheels. I think I can find super wheels, probably. And then what might be cool is to get them powder coated, just a little tint of like charcoal or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that beautiful, what do they call it? Anthracite?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. That's the plan. But for the winter, it's going to get locked up. So I'm going to follow the recommendations of the state of Illinois and use the extended antique plates only during the months allowed, April to November or whatever it is.
Now remember, you can take it to shows, events, repair shops, or the third one, which is the catch-all, to demonstrate the vehicle.
Oh, excellent.
So in theory, in the middle of January, you could demonstrate the vehicle anytime you want.
Yeah, well, it's not going to see salt, I'll tell you that.
No,
so I'm not doing that.
That needs to get preserved. It's an Illinois car, right? Is it coming from here, or is it from out west?
Can't say. I didn't do a VIN search. I should do a Carfax on just to see.
I'm curious, because I remember those cars, and this is like the kind of the – I don't know what series it – I don't know the nomenclature.
It's the 70 – well, it's a 70 series, but it's a third gen.
So it's a 90, third gen.
Yeah.
And then they restyled them in, what, like 92?
Yeah, 92, 93, and that was the AE80. Yeah.
The one that everybody like
– No, the A.
Goes gaga for it.
Yeah, that's the one with the giant swoopty fin on the back, yeah.
Yeah, such a radical difference between that and that. But yours still has that classic kind of, the late 70s, early 80s super lines.
Well, and it even kind of harks back to, the Nissan 300Zs. It was like a whole Japanese sports car look. And we're going to get into, actually, our Race Daily Kill kind of gets into this look, actually. I didn't think about it until I was doing it.
The 2 plus 2?
Yeah, but it seems like this was really competing with the American muscle cars in the Japanese version of it. So.
Well, and they did good because there's a lot of them still around, and you got a really nice one, so enjoy it.
Yeah. Also, dealership got broken into this last week. I don't even know if I want to get
into
that.
Have you heard?
Yeah. You could tune into Ford's Toyota page for that and see, but... The Supra was one of the cars that was taken, along with the Tundra, and oh my God, Daryl, I can tell you, I got the call, it was like 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, they said, hey, do you have the Supra by chance? I'm like, no. And I'm thinking, well, maybe Duran's got it, and the owner, Pat Fort, said, it's missing, and the dealership was broken into, and I'm like, ugh.
And for folks who aren't familiar, that and your 86...
Yeah.
The FRS, which you autocross both of those. Those sit out in the dealer right in the front.
Right in front. Everybody can see them. And everybody knows them right there in Auto Row.
They do. It is a beautiful, beautiful way. It draws your eye right into the dealer. It's great advertising.
Yeah.
But it went missing.
Yeah. So, with the traditional Toyota livery. Anyway, the livery. So that car was gone and the Tundra was gone. Some guys had done a smash and grab early Sunday morning, late Saturday night, and stole two cars from us, and then they went up to Auto House, stole four cars up there. And so what proceeded over Sunday and Monday was trying to find the car. They ended up finding the Tundra first, and then they found the Supra later, and Peoria police had it, and they did everything they needed to do, dusted it and checked it, and we watched video, and we sent it all to Peoria police and all that, and it was just a big train wreck. And in the meantime, we got the car back, but with no keys, so now I'm going... Dude, I am like Christopher Columbus with the Toyota region.
Yeah.
Not only have I lost both the keys to a Supra.
Which is probably the first.
I'm definitely the first. Yeah. And my regional people are like, oh, never dealt with that before. Just like when I had to replace the battery in it and put a new serial number. They're like, oh, never had to deal with that before.
You're a trendsetter.
I am. Well, I learn a lot through trial and error, it seems like.
A pioneer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the Oregon Trail. You died of
dysentery. Yeah. No, it'd be stress, epic stress. Well, I'm glad you got the car back.
Yeah.
The Tundra was also recovered.
Correct? Yeah, and the Tundra had a little bit of It smelled like smoke, like a little bit of weed. Mm. And, you know, so we're getting that car fixed back up. But the Supra was really untouched, and it was locked, so we had no keys. So the car's been sitting. We finally got the keys today. But, again, we're just going through this whole thing. So November 14th is the last autocross at Champaign County. And Dean wanted to drive the Supra with me. I don't know. I'm like, I told Dean, I'm like, sorry, dude, car's stolen. Sure. So yeah. I'm working on it. But
well, I wish you luck. And for folks, we can put the links up to your live videos. Eric did a phenomenal job. I know he probably won't toot his own horn, but just keeping the public informed of this, because I know there's a lot of not only local community interest in kind of, you know, helping each other out when something goes stolen or missing, especially, you know, a pretty high profile car like this.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's a big thank you and a shout out, too. I mean, 700 shares and 30,000 views of the video.
Saw it everywhere.
Of the day that I'm like talking about making the wall for, you know, I didn't even hold up a picture of the car. I just said, hey, everybody, our Supra was stolen. If you didn't know who we were, I mean, I was amazed we got that much traction on that
video. People knew, though. All my Facebook feed and stuff like that, Instagram was like popping up with all these pictures of the Supra. I'm like, oh, is he racing today? Yeah. Oh, no. Uh-oh. But people knew. People knew, and I'm glad you got it back. Yeah. Hopefully you can get it back on a course. And, you know, we talked a lot in the pre-show. Hint, hint. I don't want to keep pimping the pre-show, but really, it is where we can kind of just let our hair down a little bit.
Cut loose a little bit, yeah.
But we actually did go into detail about what was going on with the investigation and things like that. What we do know is younger folks were involved in some of this, and it's not the first time. Eric and I talked about this about 6 months ago. I think there was a local Mazda dealer.
Sure, yeah.
A couple others in North Peoria that got hit, something similar, where they were young, mostly minors, that were involved in some of this stuff. And it wasn't a big mastermind, right? I mean, that's the one thing we keep talking about.
And that's the thing. I keep thinking, so we watch too many movies, Daryl. I think all of us, all of us guys our age have watched enough movies. We assume that car had to have purpose. Why would somebody steal $100,000 in cars?
Right.
You'd have to have purpose, right? There has to be a garage somewhere where this, or maybe a semi-trailer is just waiting with ramps for this car to go in the back.
A crime syndicate.
Yeah, and then come to find out it's just some kids joyriding. We find the car in a parking lot in the south side of Peoria on a gravel or a dirt driveway under a carport. It just, I'm like, what? What? They went through that much. They broke through a $4,000 piece of glass and ransacked the store, risked getting caught by the cops just so they could joyride a car for 2 days. It just... doesn't make any sense to me. So I do
want to give you this an opportunity, though, because I know there were a couple little murmurings in social media like, oh, well, this is a publicity stunt.
Oh, I saw that.
Did
too.
You see that?
Yeah.
I did not bother Eric for like 4 days because I'm like, dude, I know your stuff's getting blown up. Let me know what's up. But how do you respond to that? Is that just random social media crap? Or
that had to be. Yeah, I mean, there's trolls everywhere. So I'm like, really? Of all the things, I mean, we could blow up a car or something. You know, we could do something stupid for publicity. This would never even cross the radar. Plus the fact that if you know anything about the area right now, you would know that would be the worst publicity stunt because all the dealers are dealing with it.
Everybody. Not just Pekin or Peoria. It's all over.
And this was my biggest my biggest point that I was trying to make in that social media post, and I'm so glad people shared it, was the media's not really reporting it. Now, fortunately, last weekend, those kids who broke into Auto House had still had keys, so they attempted to go back to Auto House last weekend.
Yeah, recap, though. That actually happened last weekend. Peoria police arrested. Was it four?
Yeah. So anyway, so here's the series of events. The guy showed up at our lot with a stolen car, and they jumped out, stole two cars from us, and they took that stolen car and our two cars, went up to Auto House, and they stole four more cars up there.
And Auto House here in Peoria is a Mercedes, Volkswagen, Audi,
Porsche
dealer. Yeah. Real nice high-end
cars. Yeah, and so they got away with four cars up there, but two of them had – Mercedes has some kind of a lock on them so that where they only go over 40, so those cars got abandoned. Well, then the following weekend on Sunday morning, they did it again. They showed up there. And, of course, that text immediately came back to me saying, hey, Auto House has been broken into again. I'm like, oh, great. I couldn't even – Sunday night – before Monday work, I'm like, great, they're going to be back at our store. Well, then Monday morning we find out that, hey, they caught three of them and they're prosecuting. But again, they're minors. And so the conversation keeps coming up. Are they really going to be prosecuted? And if they are prosecuted, Daryl, and this we get into this in the pre-show, I'm not trying to be a bleeding heart, but this is a no-win situation. So I don't know what we do with these kids. They have no future, and this seems to be fun. And if they go to jail, they're screwed. If we let them go, they're screwed. I just, good luck. You know, let the legal system do its job.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that we do have going for us is the cost of this stuff. It's not cheap.
No.
We're not talking about $20,000 cars or $15,000.
100 G's in two cars for us. Easy. And Mercedes had to be $300,000 in four or five cars, right?
Yeah, and that's where things are going to get real.
Yeah.
Because you know, you look at theft, you look at whatever. It's usually the dollar amount, the value stuff, yeah. And you know, it's scary. But at any rate, I'm glad things went the way they did. Yeah. And kudos for you and the entire team over at Fortz for.
Thank you, sir.
Walking through it and getting it done. And, you know, you guys are still open for business, doing your thing. And, you know, don't let any of this stuff deter you from doing what you need to do, which is take your car in for service. If you're in the market, go take a peek at what's out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Don't let any of that.
This stuff happens everywhere.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, I could talk to you till you're blue in the face. And I'm blue in the face. Anyway, but last but not least, I sold the Celica.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Red Mist is gone. I had it for sale for about $1,500, and if you did the math on everything I spent on that car, it was probably about $4,000. Angela says it was more like $5,000. What does she know?
But who's counting?
Yeah, exactly. But sold it for $1,000. I had a guy who was like willing to give me $1,400, but he wanted me to drive it to him, and another guy with $1,000 cash on Sunday night, and I'm like, sold, so I took it out.
Done.
Maybe Monday night, I don't remember. But
yeah.
So she's gone. You know, it's like pulling off the Band-Aid super fast. Just got it done, over with, took the $1,000. And it's sad, but you know what? The car had been sitting idle for the last 6 months. One summer went to college and we weren't racing it anymore. There was no reason.
It was time.
And the Supra, and really the Supra is taking the place of my 97 Celica as a daily driver. It's, you know, now the 97 Celica may fall into this horrible category of never being driven.
Mm.
What's that like, Daryl, to have a car that never gets driven?
You know, it's painful. It's a constant reminder.
As a man who knows, man on the streets.
The thing that sucks is when they stop running or stop being movable, that's when it's time to either put up or shut up.
Yeah.
Stuff that sits around and doesn't move or doesn't run, or you know, every time you go out there, the battery needs jumped.
And that's what that's Red Mist was becoming, jump every time you move it. And that sucks. So the guy who bought it knew the car, and he already was complaining about his back hurting in it because it has coilovers. I mean, I told him it's a race car.
A little stiff.
Yeah, but whatever. He knew that.
That's fine.
Anyway, that's enough about me, Daryl. I think I spent another 15 or 20 minutes talking about the trials and tribulations at Fortz and my garage.
Fine. You're fine.
What do you got going on? Because I did see Super Tahoe outside the garage. She migrated back to the house.
It's been there the whole time.
Oh,
yeah, it's been there the whole time. It was in the garage for a little bit, but then I, in was it May? Yeah, May, I brought home that 58 Plymouth, so it got booted.
Oh, okay.
And then I've just been puttering around there. I really have not been working on any car-related stuff. Sarah and I ripped out our entire disgusting, moldy, nasty basement, all the old wood paneling, everything that we needed to just shotgun that, and then we're going to have basement B-dry dewatering system put in, sump pump, the whole nine yards. Then we're going to reframe it, all new electrical. Actually got most of that stuff lined up from here until December. I got contractors coming here and there. And then we're actually going to do the framing and then the finishing work and stuff like that. So it's fine. It's all fine. It's just stressful right now. Just a little bit. Anytime you throw money into a car, house, any kind of major project, you start questioning, like, what am I doing? Like, why are we doing this? And I'll get through it. I've got a lot of anxiety, but right now, just kind of a mess. House torn apart. Also, the latest thing, just car related, and I whined about this on my personal Facebook. I didn't put anything on throwing wrenches. I probably should, because there's probably more constructive uses for that.
Yeah,
and then probably people would have some good advice, but
and sympathy,
dude. My latest thing is I keep spilling and dropping stuff in my truck and on my shirt.
The coffee today, dude. Three times on your shirt. What's up with that?
I don't. Well, the lid. Okay, so I went to Starbucks this morning and they don't put the lid on. You know, or they put the lid on and it's like right near the seam.
I think it's those paper cups. They're so eco-friendly. They're not like heavy waxy like the McDonald's ones. Yeah.
Or the styrofoam from Dunkin'.
Yeah.
You know, kudos to Dunkin'. I've never spilled anything. I never had a lid pop off a Dunkin' cup, but it's also styrofoam.
But you killed some seals.
Yeah, and it'll be around for another 300 years. But no, so that was terrible. But the worst thing in my life, as far as like as stuff I've left in the vehicle or stained or spilled, you know, usually it's coffee or usually it's, you know, French fry under the seat. No problem. I'll clean that up. No problem. While I was working on the house, Sarah and I, for like a week, like, we're not cooking. You're just going to order out, grab something, make a sandwich, you know, whatever. We ordered pizza and garlic wings from a local place in Peoria.
Oh.
Just because it sounded good.
Yeah.
And on the way home, you know, like we were up at like 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning working, and it was like 8 o'clock at night. And like, we hadn't hardly eaten anything all day. I'm starving. So I got a bunch of wings, and on the, I'm driving home. I had like a 5-minute drive, and I'm like, man, I'm gonna open up the thing.
Oh, no.
And I'm just going to have like one or two on the way home.
Yeah.
I did. And it was a styrofoam clamshell.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I took a curve or turn or something too fast in the truck, and the container with the garlic parmesan wings slid over to the corner of the truck on the passenger seat right by the door panel and then tipped. So all that lovely garlic parmesan grease,
it's like an air freshener now,
fell in between the seat back, underneath the seat, underneath the seat bolts, under the carpet, under the door sill.
In the Tundra?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The nicest...
of your vehicle.
Freshest vehicles that I've ever had. It really did. It smelled nice. It had a nice little air freshener in it. It was great. So me, at like 8:30 at night, I'm like, oh, this is a mess, and it's dark. I'll deal with this tomorrow. The next day, not only did I have to clean everything, but I discovered there was another wing that had fallen into the little mat pocket in the door panel.
Yeah.
Parmesan dust everywhere that I didn't see at night while eating it like a...
At least
like
it's
a,
just dust. At least it wasn't like hot sauce.
It's so disgusting. So I cleaned it. I did Simple Green. I did some interior cleaner, like the spray foam stuff. I did Ajax, like OxyClean, you name it. The truck reeks like garlic Parmesan grease. It is the most disgusting thing. If it was just garlic, Eric, I think it'd be fine. If it was just Parmesan, it'd be fine. The combination of pungent Italian cheese, grease, and fake garlic salt, it is the worst thing I've ever did. So I actually ordered a bunch of these. I've been reading about enzyme cleaners.
Yeah.
These for like pet and human stains and stuff. I'm going to try some of that this weekend. And if that doesn't work, I might just probably sell the truck and start over.
Now, the nice thing about this time of year is, you know, as the humidity levels drop and the temperatures drop, you probably won't smell anything until probably, what, April or May?
Probably in the spring. Yeah.
So you won't even remember this incident until next April when it rains and that dew point hits about 50 or 60. All of a sudden you'll be like,
so bad.
I smell Parmesan wings.
Like, I almost took the entire seat out and took the covers.
That's only four bolts.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of like wires. There's like a powertrain control monitor.
Just two.
Underneath that seat on the passenger side. There's a big brain box.
Oh, did it fall in there too?
Dude, it's, probably. Anyways, hit me up. If there's any detailers that listen or people who have kids that have gone through some stains and whatnot.
Maybe it's a dog that'll suck it clean.
Does your dog like chicken wing grease? Anyways, that's all I got going. I'm sorry it's gross.
I feel bad again. Once again, I've hogged the show. I'm a terrible, terrible person.
No, you're fine.
Anyway. Okay, so this is where we get to the new segment of the show that Daryl came up with three episodes ago. Maybe it was four. It was Race Daily Kill. As opposed to Race Daily... No, it was...
It's the other fun parlor game.
I don't know you, but...
Anyway. But Eric has actually embellished this, because not only do we just take three random cars and then compare them.
No, I have to make a thing out of it, because I can't do anything simple. No, there, you know,
it's
that
good.
I got to complicate everything. So
I like it because you actually go back in time and then you add a little pop culture to it.
I do. So I talked to Steve Brown at Cars and Coffee one day. We were watching the Bandit drive by and then the Jackie Gleason car. You know, son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd slap your mama. Anyway, so we watched that go around a couple times. I said to Steve, you know, Any dad who disses on their kid for dressing up like Pokemon and says, I don't understand these cosplay kids, they're wasting their time dressing up like Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever.
Going to those conventions.
Yeah. But at the same time, they'll sit there and watch a guy dressed up like Burt Reynolds, wearing the hat and the shades and the red shirt and the jeans, driving a Camaro, a Firebird, with the Dixie plate on the front, being followed by a police car, looks like Jackie Gleason's car. You cannot tell me there's any difference in that level of cosplay. As a matter of fact, I would argue that the car guy's cosplay costs 1,000,000% more than the kid going to the convention, okay?
Because it's the costume and then a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's that. I also heard the trunk or treat that they did, which we didn't go to because it was cold and rainy and we're old. The Ghostbusters car was there.
We totally olded out on that one, too. You going? I'm not going. I'm like, nah, I'm not going either.
I'm just going to go inside and watch Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, but that's...
Is that what you did?
No. As a matter of fact, had I had the trim on the Supra door, I probably would have went. But knowing that that trim was gone,
I'm too embarrassed.
Yeah, I know. Red Mist, I wouldn't have cared. Anyway.
No. The Ghostbusters car was there. So to your point, there's a lot of people that somehow it seems to be okay to do that.
Yeah.
We're not knocking them. Cool.
Back to the Future car, another cosplay one. It's got the shoes in there. It's got the hoverboard, the flux capacitor. It's got cosplay. Look it all up. Not Cosby, cosplay. So anyway, what it reminded me of is back in the 80s, we loved all this stuff of cosplay. I'm going to call it cosplay now. We loved these cars. There were stars that were actually inanimate objects. And one of them that we don't seem to talk about at all, which seems crazy to me.
Yeah, we hit up the General Lee. We talk about Ecto-1. We talk about the A-Team van. But really...
And the DeLorean.
Yeah,
but there's one car for some reason gets sadly missed. And that car has been brought back on reattempts to reinvigorate the franchise.
That's right.
Yeah, it's Kit I'm talking about. The original Knight Rider car. The David Hasselhoff show that we all came to love before he ever went on to Baywatch. And
it ruined his life.
Yes, William Daniels spoke with a proper... tone to Michael as he did horrible things to the car, and then
Michael,
I don't think you should do that. This car, the black Firebird, Pontiac Firebird, was really like the top of technology back in 1984. We really believe there was a car that could have a computer in it back in 1984. War Games. What kind of movies were coming out back then? This was the tip of technology. So, Daryl, in the theme of 1984,
yes,
high tech, maybe not so much high tech, but as in sports cars, I came up with this list for Race Daily Kill today.
Let's hear it.
I have the 1984 Pontiac Trans Am. Now, we could choose this black one here with the black rims, as in Kit, but it could be any Pontiac Trans Am.
Let's just call him Kit.
We'll call it Kit.
Which is a nomenclature for, it's like Knight Industries Turbo something, Turbo... Somebody can look this up. We don't have internet here at Eric's house. Doggone it.
But
it's like Turbo 2000 or something, Turbo Tech something.
And then you're up against the Ford Mustang SVO, Daryl.
Beautiful car.
A 175-horsepower turbocharged four-cylinder.
Yes.
And then we have the Jaguar XJS. Possibly the most demure of the two doors in the group here. A whopping 262-horsepower, 5.3-liter V12. With a 3-speed automatic.
That's an interesting lineup. It really is. And I like these. I'll tell you what. I like it when they're similar, but not similar enough to where it's like it wouldn't matter what we picked. Yeah. Like this is like there's a couple little curveballs.
There's some nuances in here, Daryl. Yeah, I would like to know, Daryl, Race Daily Kill. What are your selections here?
Okay. So if it's up to me. At some of this, I didn't even think about this, but some of it might depend. If it was just a Firebird, it might change everything. But if it was Kit...
I didn't put the Kit aspect in there.
Okay, all right. So let's say base Trans Am 305, 5-speed, okay? 84 Trans Am. Mm-hmm. Looking at that lineup, I would say I'd have to race the Mustang SVO. Having driven a couple of those and other Ford Turbo 2.3s over the years, it's a fun motor. They don't stay stock for long, like any turbo car, and actually it's kind of fun. The SVO is actually classy, too, because it's got those Fox body lines, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
I'd race the SVO because turbo. I'd daily the Jaguar because I'm a man of stature and status and privilege.
Yeah, that's your style, actually.
Right. I do love the interior.
The oldest young man I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, I need a London fog coat so I can drive my British car.
No, definitely a pipe you could chew on. I could hear it clack in your teeth while you're driving it.
Look like the guy who played Philip in The Professor.
Or maybe Edward Muller, the David Hasselhoff's boss.
The guy who played Devin in Knight Rider. I don't even get that relationship. That was weird. I'd kill the Trans Am, folks. I love Trans Ams. I love the F-body cars. But I think this is a tough one. The Jaguar would have a nice smooth ride. And the most horsepower for the 1980s, let's just take that V12 and run with it. They're probably a nightmare to work on. But I'd be so rich because I have a Jaguar.
You're alluding to what I'm thinking.
I would just pay someone to fix that stuff. Or put a small block Chevy in it and be done. Anyways, that's my choice. What's your lineup?
All right, so I'm definitely racing the Mustang. I think I want to hear that 175 horsepower is roaring from that 2.3 liter.
Oh, yeah.
The car is actually about the same weight as the Trans Am, but you know what? With a 5-speed manual, I think that car rips a short wheelbase. Totally fun.
Yes.
And it's going to make a bunch of noise and be a blast. I'm daily in the Trans Am. I mean, if I can get the 5-speed manual on that thing with the 5-liter, 190 horsepower,
yeah.
I think it's a smooth ride. I mean, suspension on that GM model felt pretty smooth. And I'm not saying it's an XJS, but here's what I know about the XJS, Daryl. I've owned enough import cars in my life to know that once the warranty runs out on that thing, the 5.3-liter V12, I'll never be able to afford any bill. Coffin Mayer will own my life on that car. I'll go to Uftring Nissan, or not Nissan, Uftring Jaguar in East Peoria for a couple services, and I'll be like, oh, this is really expensive. And then you'll find me going up to Coffin Mayer. And then eventually after Coffin Mayer, I'll be down at Jimmy's Imports down the south side of Peoria, which I'm trying to remember. What's that place down there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's a new one up north, and it's like... Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never want to spend the money that car demands. So,
by the way,
I'm killing the Jaguar XJS.
I think that's a wise choice. That's probably a choice I should have made because
that's not your style, though, is it?
No.
No.
Just a tangent here. Why are those like the third or fourth tier import repair shops? How come every car sitting out front is like an Audi? I just want to throw that out there. It's like an 80s, like a late 80s, early 90s Audi 90. Or like an old 190E Mercedes just sitting for years.
And the 190 kills me because that's probably one of the easier cars. I mean, it's an inline four and rear-wheel drive. That car should be pretty easy. But I think the head gaskets blue pretty common on those cars. So.
It's sad because they're great. The leather, or the PEX, whatever.
The vinyl, the pleather.
That stuff holds up, but the thing that kills it seems to be something mechanical or electrical or whatever.
Or and they rust. Just park they them. Always corroded.
Yeah, it's too sad. Great choice, Eric. I think you're making a wise choice.
Now, the one thing that came up that I selected 1984 Pontiac Trans Ams, there's like five drive lines for this car.
Too many.
Yeah, LQ9, the LC1, the LL1, the LG4, the L69. I mean, what in the world are all these different combinations?
I think what they were trying to do, because the car was so much lighter than the previous F-bodies, and the F-body folks can chime in. I know there's a few listening right now. The when they first came out with that downsized one in 82, which is what the Knight Rider one is, 82 to 92 is when they ran that body style. It was the third gen F-body. They thought, well, hey, people don't want a big gas-guzzling V8, but they want a cool, sporty car. We can throw this Iron Duke Pontiac motor in here with 92 horsepower. It's the same motor that was in like the base motor that was in the S10s and the Fiero when the Fiero first came out.
Okay.
It's a dog. It's a total dog. So that only lasted, I think, 2 or 3 years. They had a 2.8 Chevy V6 option in there, which is pretty okay. And then the 5-liter. And I think, like, in California, there was all kinds of restrictions on the type of motors that was going in those two. And I love that. The high output motor in the early 80s was 190 horse V8. Ouch. But that just shows you how far we've come today.
Oh, we can squeeze out 190 horsepower out of a 2-liter nowadays.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And or you know, have like a 300 horsepower Kia sedan.
Or a 2.5 liter,
It's insane.
Yeah.
So I respect what we're able to do here with engineering, but I also think there's something to be said for, you know, back in the day, horsepower was cheap because all you were heads, intake, and a cam away from making some serious power.
True. Yeah, I mean, the bottom side of that engine could take tons and tons of modifications.
Sure.
I mean, you could pound as much as you want off the top side putting air and fuel in that thing, right?
That's why those old Fox Body Mustangs were so great, because you got one with a 302 that probably made about the same, 185, 190 horse. And that's why places like Summit and Jags and all those like mail order places, Racer Walsh, all that stuff made so much money, was because you could have a couple buddies and have a weekend or two worth of work, and you could have something closer to 300 horse, which is what that motor should have been.
That's kind of fun, really, to think about it. Hey, guys, let's bang out another 100 horsepower in this car this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those days are over. Now you just flash it.
Yeah.
Just flash tune it.
And then you're really not sure if you got a legitimate 100 horsepower out of it,
Yeah, and it also depends if some guy named, Trevor is flashing your ECU.
Yeah.
Does Trevor really know what's going on?
Yeah. I reached out to Trevor out in New Jersey, and he sent me a tune, so we're going to try and plug that in.
That's cool.
Trevor, the file's not working. I'm not here right now.
So. Trevor, I just grenaded a piston because it ran too lean. What?
Didn't do it right.
Bummer. Any kind of warranty on that?
Nope.
No. And then voicemail deleted.
Yeah, Trevor. Trevor goes to an Ivy League school and he does this on the side. Anyway, so, Daryl, this all brought me into the rabbit hole.
Just found the marble in the oatmeal. Lucky, lucky, lucky little boy. You know why? You get to drink from the
rabbit hole.
We haven't hit a good rabbit hole in a while.
It's my favorite new segment.
So here's the deal about the rabbit hole in this one, Daryl. Because this is Race Daily Kill, merge with the rabbit hole. Everybody says fox body, but does everybody know what fox body actually means?
It's made with real fox.
Yeah. The Fleet Foxes?
That's right.
Yeah. So here's what I did, Daryl. I actually did a Google search for fox body. And what did I find? Apparently, there was a platform. In 1979, Ford introduced the third-generation Mustang. They call it the Fox Mustang because they based it on the Fox unibody platform. It was modern, sleek, and better yet, it was aerodynamically efficient, much cooler than the Mustang II. And that platform was used by Ford Company, introduced for compact sedans in 1978. It utilized a wide variety of configurations for Ford and Lincoln Mercury vehicles. The platform was used through 1993, which killed me when I looked this up and saw that the whole list of cars all the way through the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it actually went through the next redesign of the Mustang. So technically, there's two Fox Body Mustangs. Do people actually acknowledge that when they talk about the Fox Body?
They consider the Fox Body, if you're a purist, you consider the Fox Body 79 to 93.
Okay.
In 94, they call it the SN95. Which basically is the underpinnings, the suspension, I mean, mounting points, floor pans, all that is basically Fox body. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit longer. Fox body actually supported as homely of a car as the Ford Fairmont and Mercury Zephyr, all the way to the Thunderbirds and Cougars. Thunderbirds and Cougars. The second iteration of the Ford Granada and Mercury Cougar, the boxy sedans, kind of like a Fairmont. Then you also had the LTD and the Mercury Marquis, the downsized ones, not the ones that are the big kind of police cars.
And those cars, I mean, when you think about those cars and you were to put them all together and you see them in a list, you're like, oh, there is some similarity in the and really the stance. It's the width of the cars.
Yeah.
All look very similar.
Wheelbase is a little bit different on the Lincoln Continental and the Mark 7s, the ones that I actually really like those. They're really sharp. The proportions are great. And they could fit a wide variety of power plants from the 2.34 to the 200 inline six to the 3.8 V6 to the ultimately 5 liter and then later the 4.6 when they switched to a modular motor, which all it took was a change of a K member. The whole front engine cradle and all that could get swapped out and you could put the newer motors
in. It's kind of when you think about this now, as I learned some of this stuff going down rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you set up a platform to hold a certain engine and you know that all these cars have this platform, then that means all these engine makers can make sure they build stuff that fits in that, you know, that stance or situation of the car, right?
It's really nice, and I think Ford, you're absolutely right on that. And it also, it's economy. It's economy of scale. So the gentleman who at the time kind of got a name for platform and badge engineering, but really about efficiency and being smart about things, Lee Iacocca. When he was at Ford.
Oh, old Lee rears his head back up here again.
That's where he started up with, working on the things like the Falcon and then developing it into the Mustang and the Fairlane and things like that. And, of course, Mercury Comet and all the others. The same thing with this. In the 70s, Ford was really struggling, as much of the United Auto industry was. So these late 70s cars, the Fox chassis, was actually like, hey, we're going to get a Mustang out of this, a smaller efficiency car. We're going to Fairmont wagons, you know, all this stuff like that. But we're only going to really make one platform.
Yeah.
And then the full size will be its own thing. And then trucks. So, of course, Lee Iacocca was fired famously from Ford, I think, around 78, 9, something like that. And then 79 went to Chrysler and did the same thing with the K-car.
Yeah, K-cars.
Minivans, Horizons, Omnis, you name it, the LeBarons.
Yeah.
So he kind of did the same thing. The Fox chassis was unique because it was still front engine, rear wheel drive, as opposed to the K-car. And he also had the ability to take something like a homely little Ford Fairmont, pull a Mustang V8 out of it and hop this thing up.
That's true. And you could, so as a tuner at home, and even later on, 30 years now down the road, you could start swapping stuff around and have a lot of flexibility.
And that's why I think the F-bodies, I mean, obviously, an 80s IROC Z or a Trans Am GTA or something like that, you can still mod those, and they have a following. But the Fox Body Mustang, I think, transcended all that because there were so many more of them, and they were, the parts were so cheap. I mean, I remember you could – the first thing guys would do when they bought an old, you know, 85, 84 GT Mustang hatchback, they would – with a 302 in it, they would go and they'd go call up Summit Warehouse or Performance Auto Warehouse. Like, that was the cheaper one, PAW. They would – like, yeah, I want a YN Stealth, a Holley 750, I want this, an E303 cam, and a Center Force dual friction clutch. And for, you know, $1,000
Did you get that? Did you get that shopping list, folks? That's what Daryl does.
That's the magic number. And then, of course – Shorty, JBA headers, and Flowmaster Series 40s. That's the signature. That's the hot setup right
there. This is why Daryl's here.
So that was always the fun part, whereas somebody, oh, dude, my buddy Kyle just brought home a new Mustang. And within a month, that thing was 300, 350 horse and getting tickets downtown. That's what we did. That's what I did in high school.
God, that's great. That's awesome.
Anyways, that was a fun rabbit hole, Eric.
Yeah, I figured, and again, everybody says Fox Body, but do they really know what Fox Body is? And now you know.
And knowing is half the battle.
That's what G.I. Joe said. Anyway. All right.
Let us know if you agree, too. I love hearing the feedback. We had a couple people that chimed in. It's like, hey, your last race daily kill, like, you guys shouldn't agree. You should not agree. I'm like,
I mean, there's going to be legitimate times we're going to agree and we're going to disagree. So I think you're insane for dailing that Jaguar. So I think I disagreed with you this time.
Pretty much.
All right. So now we move on to the meat potatoes of the show. We are 1 hour in and we're just getting to headlines. So let's make this super quick, Daryl.
Okay. All right.
In international news, Mercedes will have a shiny new bauble for the America number one percenters and to park in their driveways this Christmas, a Mercedes Maybach SUV. In early December, Mercedes will enter the rarefied world of ultra luxe SUVs and the most expensive passenger vehicle made in America. The 2021 Maybach GLS 600 4MATIC starts at $161,000, Daryl, including shipping. Fully loaded, that SUV will top out at nearly $200,000.
It's pocket change, Eric. It's pocket change.
Yeah, I can tell you, Daryl, I posted a picture of this, and I'll share it on the Throwing Wrenches website, but you can look it up right now. It's the 2021 Maybach GLS 600. That car looks like a Lincoln Navigator in two-tone paint with a 28-spoke wheel. And I'm telling you,
it's hideous.
I don't care if it's a Lambo. I don't care if it's a Rolls-Royce. I don't care if it's a Mercedes. An ultra-luxe SUV looks like a station wagon no matter what you do to it. And I just think the world of ultra-luxe needs to stay away from SUVs.
I'll roll with that. Just the regular Mercedes G-Wagon, the GLS series, whatever that is.
That's a military vehicle.
Well, yes, but they also have, like, they still call their big flagship SUV a G-Series in the States, which is weird.
The G-Wagon.
Yeah, but it's a nice-looking vehicle. When you start getting goofy, like you're saying, with the two-tone paint and what looks to be like the AutoZone reflective trim around the windows, and it just... It kills it for me. It absolutely kills it. I think we were talking in the pre-show. I think you could get just the same amount of effect if you wanted to impress somebody and be like, hey, I've got a lot of money and I'm classy. Like, go buy an Escalade or go buy a Navigator and save yourself, I don't know, $85,000, $90,000.
Yeah, I think a full-blown Escalade loaded and then take it to a shop and do whatever you want to and pimp it out would be far more gratifying than this thing.
And then take that extra money and keep it for what you need to put the fuel tank, because those things are terrible.
Donate it to charity, because that's what you do on the weekends anyway. You go to charity balls.
Right, exactly. Anyway,
that's that much more you can give the children.
All right. Speaking of things that cost about as much but are maybe a little cooler, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, do you want this one? National news, Daryl.
Sure. National GM, if you've seen some of the social media hubbub. Thank you. Hubba bubba. General Motors has debuted the electric Hummer pickup. That's right. The Hummer is back, ladies and gentlemen. An $80,000 starting price tag, fully equipped, somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000, $112,000. General Motors showed its much-anticipated battery-powered Hummer pickup in an online video. Might have seen that, spearheading the automaker's renewed push into the electric vehicle market. It's coming out in 2022. The model year truck is going to have a starting price of $80,000 and a range of 350 miles when fully charged. GM says it will sell it at GMC dealerships once production starts in the fall of 2021. And the driving range is about the same as Tesla's Model 3. That seems to be kind of the sweet spot between 3 and 400-mile range. 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It has, I forget what they call it, it's like turbo boost or something.
Absolutely necessary for a truck that size.
Ludicrous speed, yeah. Right? That puts it pretty much up with a gas sports car power range, you know, like a Porsche, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a truck.
But it's
so
a truck.
It's cooler.
So it's much cooler. It's going to actually try to bolster on GM's strength in pickups. They've actually, you know, done pretty well with the Silverado and Sierra brands. But the Hummer, if you've seen the images, curious to hear what your take is on this, Eric. To me, it looks like something straight out of 2002.
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks like something from a Terminator movie. I mean, I think you put a gun platform in the back and you're shooting at robots. But
just piles of dust everywhere.
But really, the front end of this thing reminds me of the Rivian. And it just looks like a wider body Rivian. And unfortunately, I think even like the Nikola truck, I think a lot of these trucks look like, I'll give Tesla credit maybe, where credit is not due, that their design is completely different than all these electric trucks. I just don't understand why these electric trucks have the same look. Is it the square, you know, urban assault vehicle look that we're going for and everything?
I think it is. I think it's all about image. I don't think these are the trucks that truck people need.
Yeah.
You know, like the Sam Elliott voiceover in the Rams, you know, Ram. No, but I really don't. I think it's the truck because I want a truck. Jimmy Fallon, years ago, like the Tonight Show was sponsored by Ford at one point, and he's like, hey, I just want to get a truck. I just want a truck. I need a truck. And I'm like, dude lives in New York City. He's on the Tonight Show. Probably has people driving everywhere.
He has people to pick up a truck for him.
Yeah, but he has an F-150. And I'm like, that's the kind of person who's going to buy a Tesla truck or a Hummer truck.
I can drive from Connecticut to work every day and put on the charging station and drive back to Connecticut at night.
Right, but I look like I'm beefy and manly with my flannel and my truck and my Starbucks. It's
well,
stupid.
Get back and let's go back to the Maybach. Exact same mentality there. I don't know. I think electric trucks are a thing. We talk a lot about electric vehicles. It's all in the news, but will people actually buy it? I can't wait to see Velde GMC down the road from us selling one of these in 2 years. We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We shall see.
All right. Next article is, and that article actually was from Bloomberg. Sorry.
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg also reports, shaken up by Trump, auto lobby eyes impacted the Biden presidency. A Biden administration would likely restore aggressive Obama-era emission targets that Trump has tried to roll back. In addition, the former vice president would likely put more on Washington's focus on electric and autonomous cars moving forward to ensure that the auto workers build the vehicle of the future. An extension of the $7,500 credit for EV vehicles would also probably be happening, which has been pretty common, but it fades right now if you know the rules on that. Won't even get into that whole thing. So we expect that would get kicked back up because Trump has kind of moved the key back on that. Anyway, sorry, got distracted there. Trump would, conversely, 4 more years of Trump would see a continuation of efforts for rollback on auto mileage standards and revoke California's power to issue its own standards. We've also talked about that on previous shows where he's actually tried to sue California because he doesn't think that what they're doing is affecting the American market properly. So it's going to be interesting. This is in Bloomberg. We'll put a link to it. I'd be interested to see what people think. Trump did what he did, I think, in order to try and help restore the American car makers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a short term, you know, I think with Europe going to 2030 rules for EV vehicles and no emission vehicles.
I think the writing's on the wall.
I think it is.
Yeah.
So I think that I think you let California lead by if California wants to sink or swim with it, you let them do it. You know, if it pays off, it pays off. But let them experiment. As far as I'm concerned, California is a sandbox on this stuff. The rest of the country doesn't have to follow suit. They can watch what happens there.
Well, and as far as the EV tax credits, I mean, early on that seemed to spur a lot of sales of things like the Volt and the Nissan Leaf and things like that where you actually got to write a lot of that stuff off. Has that been extended? Is it
no, so sunset, here's the deal right? on that. So this is kind of what I was kind of getting milky there in the middle of this. The $7,500 tax credit started off, you know, initially the first, like so many cars were sold, no matter if they were Toyotas, Nissans, Chevys, there was a $7,500 tax credit. But once 100,000 or a million cars or whatever were sold, then that tax credit was reduced to $3,750. And you could watch people literally say, I'm not going to buy an EV vehicle or a hybrid plug-in vehicle because that tax credit wasn't there. So these tax credits really do inspire people to buy the car or not.
It is funny to see. There's a lot of, I think I talked about on the last show, one of my friends, actually I know two people now that have bought fully electric vehicles, a Volt and a Bolt.
Okay.
And the reason was because they came off secondary market and they're cheap. They're so cheap. But I remember when those things were new, the only way that they could get them to sell is like, well, that's a $50-some-thousand vehicle, but with this credit and this credit.
You get it for $40,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a shame because you look at the tech that's in those types of cars, even the Leaf, you know, we talked to, that's a nice, cheap little car that's kind of ahead of its time. But if that's not incentive enough, isn't I'm saving the planet, quote unquote, then what else you got?
Yeah.
And that's where I'm, you know, curious to see. This is an interesting take on that.
No, I think the election definitely will have a large impact on what happens, especially with California. There was a lot of pressure by the Trump administration against California.
Yeah.
So if Trump doesn't win, you have to imagine that California will be free to do whatever it wants. And I don't know, man. Well, I mean, we could have a conversation for an hour about what goes on in California. But again, I think you let them do their thing. If it works for them, it works for them. If it doesn't work for them, we can all sit back and say, yep, we're not doing that. So,
makes sense.
Yeah. Next article from Auto Remarketing is most recent car buyers now want home delivery. Daryl, do you know that?
It's not delivery. It's
Carvana.
Carvana. Anyway,
yeah. Real-time messaging and chat functionality, virtual vehicle walk-arounds and test drives, video, and compelling financing and trade-ins online. That's what customers want, Daryl. Those are some of the new methods customers are using to purchase their new and used vehicles from local dealerships. Consumers have turned their personal car ownership as their preferred and safe mode of transportation at the start of the pandemic to far and beyond, cars.com Chief Executive Alex Vetter said in a news release. So I think this is going to be the thing. I mean, as Amazon becomes the way we buy cars or buy anything.
Anything.
And Walmart, same thing. I think buying cars, unfortunately, cars are a commodity. You can find out everything you want. You get the virtual 360s.
That's what kills me. If you look at even a local dealer, I was looking at some stuff at El Paso a couple weeks ago, 43 images, 360 walk around virtual, you know, everything. I'm like, the days of you just putting one or two pictures of a car on a website and be like, hey, if you're interested, call this guy, here's the salesman's number. Yeah. You guys have to do so much. Are you seeing a demand for – I mean, you guys cater to some of this, like with service, right? No, you pick up cars and drop them off. And right?
No, I think that's just going to – well, it's funny because you think all these places that don't do it, you're like, hey, God, I'm glad they're not. I mean, because if everybody was doing that, you know, we'd have some competition. It's nice when guys are still behind. We're in the Midwest. And I always say this, whether it's craft beer, whether it's anything,
15
everything,
years too late.
Everything bleeds in eventually. You know, whatever's going on the coast eventually bleeds out here. So eventually customers in Central Illinois will expect what people on the other coasts expect. But as of right now, they're not getting it, so they don't know any better.
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
Talk to friends that have bought cars and get them serviced out in the West Coast, and it's like, oh, I went in, I got my, you know, my venti latte, whatever, in the service area, got my nails done, got all this done. I'm like, are you at like a Lexus dealer? Oh, no, it was a Ford dealer. I'm like, what? But they've turned that into a whole experience, right?
But you know, right now, from my house, as you're experiencing with the internet, if I said, honey, let's shop for a car online, I couldn't do it anyway because my internet sucks so hard here in Central Illinois. So, so we'd have to we'd be out there looking at the cars. We'd find them online, but we'd still have to drive around. So I think there's still a technology disparity. I don't think we can honestly expect that 90% of our customers have high speed internet access like out there.
And I wouldn't think that it would be a big thing. But then again, I know people who buy entire couches and living room sets on Wayfair without seeing them.
Yeah.
They'll just be like, oh, yeah, it looked good. I checked the dimensions. It's fine. And then a dude shows up with a truck.
Yeah.
And
a million pounds of cardboard and styrofoam.
Dude, it's nuts.
And packing plastic.
I can't do that. I can't shop that way. Cars for me are such a – it's a tactile thing. You're going to be sitting in it, spending so much time in it, and being a bigger guy. I mean, that's my takeaway is nothing ever fits me. Yeah. Clothes, hats,
no,
shoes.
No, you're a tried-on guy, aren't you?
I have to go sit in that. So the fact that people are just like, yeah, Carvana, boop, 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 done, and it shows up there. Cool. If you're 5'12" and everything fits just right, great. But I don't know. I got to see it.
Well, shoes, I'm the same way, man. Unless I'm buying the exact same pair of shoes as the last one, I'm not buying them online. I have got to try these things on. It just drives me nuts. So.
Yep, I get you. Yeah. I get you. Recall alerts?
Yeah, we got a recall notification from Ford.
What's going on? Ford Motor Company warned Monday that certain 2019-2020 Ford Transit Connect vans, those are kind of like the delivery van looking things, they might have an engine flaw. It could create a little bit of a fire risk, just little flames.
Yeah.
While certain 2020 Ford Escape SUVs have tire pressure monitoring flaws that could lead to a loss of control. Not quite sure what that means, if that's because it's not reporting a loss of tire pressure and you'll do the whole...
Oh, that's a great thought. I thought more of like a massive evacuation of air from the tire and then you could lose control that way. I'm still trying to figure out... How you send that letter to the customer saying, hey, by the way, your tire pressure monitors could lead to a loss of control.
I think that the same person that words that words all the disclaimers for medications.
Gabe Casey, we need a tip on this.
Celebrex may cause death. What? And I just lost the dock.
So. Oh, no. Well, I'll carry it from here.
Thank you.
Both vehicles were subject to recalls along with high-performance Mustang Shelby 350 GTs and the GT500 for its light system. The company said it was unaware of any accident or injury related to these situations. That's in the Detroit Free Press. Daryl, we have no internet, so you may be screwed from the rest of the show.
I think I am. All right.
In local news, now, I was sitting in the waiting room the other day, and I was talking to customer Brian, who I spoke of earlier in the show. He mentioned that I was wrong when I spoke of Rivian the other day because I still make bold statements that Rivian hasn't built anything.
Like we think it might not be a real thing?
I still say it's a house of cards over there until I see 100 cars out in their parking lot. But anyway, he goes, no, Rivian dropped off a couple hundred cars from Amazon. Got a couple hundred cars from Rivian, delivery trucks, and or 20, I think is what he said. So I actually sought out this article, and it falls into our local news category, because Rivian did, in fact, show up with one delivery van for Amazon for a big press release. The van itself was fairly bare bones and practical as you'd expect from a delivery vehicle. This is from Autoblog, by the way. While Amazon and Rivian remain tight-lipped regarding the van's exact specifications, they will say it will offer 150 miles of total range. That doesn't seem like much, but they say it's class-leading. Rivian will announce its battery supplier for the project later in 2020. The vehicle we've developed with Amazon is not just electric. We prioritize safety and functionality to create a vehicle that's optimized for package delivery, said R.J. Scaringe, Rivian CEO. We thought through how drivers get in and out of the van, what the workspace feels like, and what the workflow is for delivering packages.
Does anybody care?
I don't know.
I mean, they care because it's neat and electric. They don't care. Like, nobody's like, inside the postal delivery vehicle, it is big and optimized for driver. Like, nobody cares.
It's like a 1950s video of, you know, like ergonomics or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Inside the space.
Does my box get here on time? Cool.
Now, on counterpoint to this, Amazon has also ordered 1,800 electric Mercedes-Benz delivery vans from Daimler for European operations. So which do you think is going to show up first, Daryl? The Mercedes-Benz vans or the Rivian vans?
My money is on the Germans.
The Germans.
No, seriously, because they already make those Sprinters, right?
Yeah,
the
do.
Dodge Sprinter was a Mercedes, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they already got the tooling. They're not having to reinvent the wheel. It's a box that carries boxes.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters is what's powering it.
Yeah.
And how often it's going to be broken down on the side of the road.
I tell you what, RJ Scaringe.
Can Rivian just like make something cool? Because I'll tell you what.
Did you notice the headlights were like identical? They did. So the deal is with Rivian now, their headlights. They're like the Dodge Neon. Remember when the Neons came out? It was just like the headlights were like their
round and cute.
Yeah. So that's what the Rivian's done now. Everything's like round and cute.
It does.
Two little white ellipses, and then they surround the headlight.
Remember, was it Robbie the robot? It was the old NES robot? It didn't do anything.
I don't remember that, but
yeah, it's like the early days of Nintendo. They had this Robbie the robot, and he I don't know if he held stuff or what. Somebody could chime in on that, but it's that cute kind of a I don't know robots like a Wall-E, right? Like
Wall-E
robots are our friends.
Yeah.
It's what it looks like. It's a cute little truck.
All right. Well, Daryl struggles to get internet in the bunker of the Stahl household in Studio A. I'm going to move on to the moment of Musk. Elon's on Mars. This moment of Musk actually takes place in space, so the Lost in Space theme song falls in perfectly. To quote Elon in Popular Science, the acid test really is, if the ships on Earth stop coming for any reason, does Mars die out? Musk told interviewer Robert Zurbin during a live-streamed event. for any reason, it could be banal, or it could be a nuclear Armageddon, he added. Musk recently also said he expects Mars settlers will die during the process of traveling to and from and settling Mars in the longer term. That's a common theme from imperialist settlements like Jamestown or Roanoke to the explorers who first crossed Antarctica or sailed across the Pacific Ocean. That was in Popular Science, folks. I'll link it in the article. And that is your moment of Musk. You're going to die on Mars, Elon.
In 2020.
In the year 2020.
Elon Musk sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't rhyme. What was it? I don't know. He's quite the explorer, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, you know what? I just felt like I could do an automotive one. He had a bunch of stuff going on. The Tesla just passed by Mars. Oh, I just lost my sound. What did you do, Daryl? Oh, that's okay. My headphone. No, we're good. I'm good. Okay. Daryl shut down his laptop because the internet has just blocked out. Do you have Grinding of the Gears, Daryl?
I do have Grinding of the Gears.
All right.
I don't have images. Click to load this thumbnail is what it says. Oh, my
live
goodness.
Live my life, Daryl. Live my life.
Yeah. You know what? There's some of it I would live. I just drive the Supra. That's what I would drive.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Grinding the Gears segment is where we just used to be things that were stuck in our craw.
Yeah, definitely the craw. Daryl has a lot of craw space.
I do have a lot of craw space. But this time, I actually just want to throw out – I just had this random thought. Everybody is obsessed with – wheels, rims, aftermarket, you know, what a Tundra group I'm on Facebook.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Dude, half the posts are like, dude, what about these rims? Thinking about these rims. Think about these rims. And that's cool. Like, trust me, there's some neat aftermarket rims that make your stuff look dynamite. But the last thing I want to do is spend, you know, $2,200 on rims and tires on something I just spent money on. Like, and I think the days of, like, the aftermarket or the big, huge, chunky, cool alloy wheel, I think that's run its course. I think so. Here's why. They scuff. They suck to clean. They're expensive. Most of them are much heavier than a stock wheel they replace.
Sure.
Which kills me because I thought the whole point of having like a big alloy wheel or just, you know, is to lighten things up, make it a little bit lighter. And, of course, to look cool. But if you go back to even like the Kragers and stuff or the Keystone Classics back in the day, like those are big, heavy, big rims. So I'm just proposing this. Why can't we go back to steel wheels and dogfish hubcaps? You know, Land Rover, they're doing it on their new Defenders, if you see some of those.
Yeah, it looks like to me like you got a wheel there with a open cap in the middle like an old truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, real beefy. You know, if you're on a trail or you're – even if you curb it, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You just kind of sand it down, scuff it, paint it. Ford's using some on their new Broncos, and it's so funny. Everybody was looking at like the renderings of their new Bronco, like, oh, this is going to look sweet. This is going to look sweet. Then they actually come out, and some of them, like, they actually have some steel wheels, and they're painted like black or body color. And everybody loses their mind, like, oh, those wheels are terrible. These are terrible. I think they look great.
Yeah.
And I'll throw a picture up here in the post. But to be honest, I think if you need a change of attitude, you got steel wheels, paint the wheels. Done.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to go and replace the entire kit and caboodle with the, you know, giant rims. So I don't know. I think steel wheels should make a comeback, and I think they should start doing more and more of them on cars, especially trucks. I think they look great on trucks. But let me know. I'm probably way off base, but, you know.
No, I'm kind of with you. Actually, FJ Cruiser, a lot of them were stock with black steel wheels, and that's what my son has. I took some black steel wheels from my buddy Stork.
Oh, yeah.
And put them on his 4Runner.
Those are off an FJ.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they look great. I have no problem with the steel wheels. And as a matter of fact, as somebody who can go out on the trail, I have absolutely zero problem with those things. The only thing I'll tell you that the guys who mountain balance tires hate steel wheels.
Do they?
You know why? Because they hold the rubber so well. Alloy wheels are much easier to break down. So what's that tell you when you're out on the trail or you're driving a car? Which one would you rather have on your car if you were sliding near a curb or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And which one can you take a ball peen hammer to and knock out when it gets dented? The steel wheel.
That's true.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think the steel wheel, it's time. It should come back. I think the advantages to alloy wheels, the weight for one, but the corrosion resistance is not there. There's so many coats of like clear coat on these things now. And all it does after 10 years start peeling. And I have to explain to customers over and over that aluminum corrodes. What do you mean? They're rusting, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. They're aluminum. It doesn't rust. What is this stuff? Yeah. It's oxidation, otherwise known as
corrosion. Yeah. It's different, and it's actually, it's even more sinister the way it goes. I mean, a steel wheel, you could at least grind it and seal it. Yeah. On an aluminum wheel, there's so much pitting and so porous that even if you grind it and clear coat it, you don't really know if the air is going to stop passing through it.
No. And so if they're not a post on some of these groups that I'm on for, like, the, you know, different vehicles, it's even old cars, they'll be like, hey, who refinishes aluminum wheels? Yeah. Every week there's like three or four, like, who locally does aluminum, who fixes aluminum, who fixes this and that. Dude, stop. And I love, you know, I'm not trying to discourage you because we were talking about finding some nice aluminum, you know, old school original
for the Supra, and I'll do the same thing. I'll get the guy with the walnut blaster to softly take off the finish.
And then re-clear them.
And then we'll powder coat them. And you know what? They'll last about 10 years, and you'll have to do it again.
But you'll actually clean them up. Like some people, too, that kill, especially the nice newer cars, you'll see guys that'll, you know, they'll clean the car, they'll wax, they'll do whatever, but they won't do the wheels, and they'll have like 2 years of brake dust just built up.
Yeah.
Or they'll just hose it off. I got this wheel cleaner, I just spray it on, hose it off. Like, that ain't cleaning the brake dust, dude. That clear coat's trash in 5 years. Anyways, that's enough of my grinding of the gears.
Well, that's okay. I was actually, we're going to Cars of the Week here, and I don't have a price on my car, and I feel like a schmuck here. Oh, man. You want to do your Car of the Week first?
Yeah, we can do a little reverse here. While Eric looks up the priceless price of his vehicle, which...
First off, Cars of the Week. If you don't know Cars of the Week, Daryl and I, we sit around and we dream about cars. And in order to dream about cars, you get on the web and you cruise through all the sites. There's a normal cruise pattern. It's like going down Auto Row. We go down Craigslist. We go down Car Gurus. We go down to Facebook Marketplace. We got some...
Bring a trailer.
Bring a trailer. Definitely kicking tires all over that. And then what we do is we think about owning that car. But we're not going to buy it, mind you. We're just going to...
Of course not.
And we might even ask a question to the person who posted the car. That's when you know you're most dangerous.
Real.
You're not going to buy the car, but you still ask a question about it.
Is this still available?
Yeah, you're a total tire kicker. You're totally that guy from Caterpillar who's on his 2-week cat break in the summer. There's nothing better to do. Didn't go on vacation with his family, but you still cruise through all the car lots just to kick tires.
Hey,
that's you asking a question on Facebook Marketplace.
Think about getting a Corvette, are you? No.
Nah. But me and my buddy are bored.
Can I take it for a test drive? No.
Yeah.
All right, so while Eric does a little more research with his one bar of service here in the basement.
I got it.
Oh,
I'm on it.
Okay.
You ready? You want me to do it?
Yeah, do it.
All right.
You're raring to go. Go for it.
Well, I wasn't raring. So, Daryl, I don't even know what inspired this, but I got on Craigslist this week.
This is a weird choice.
It is so weird. But I'm sitting there. I'm like, I found a Volkswagen van. I found some other stuff. I'm like, I've found this car. I've done this. And so I went to St. Louis, Daryl. I went to St. Louis on Craigslist, which is so easy to do. You just hit surrounding cities, and I'm like, let's see what's down in St. Louis for me to kick the tires on.
With a 200-mile radius of St. Louis.
And, you know, is there a Lotus, maybe? Oh, look at this, a Lotus. It's a 1972 Lotus Europa S2. The gentleman is asking $13,900 for this.
Seriously?
In Burney, Missouri. All right, so here's the deal. And I say gentleman because it's a nice orange patinaed paint job. It's got the number 19 on the side of it, and it's parked in front of what looks to me like a prefab house in a nice little subdivision somewhere. The description is written by a gentleman. It's an original 1565 Renault four-cylinder. The engine head was obtained in the early Lotus 46 as a larger intake valve, Siamese ports. It's had 0.3 inches machined from the faces. This gives compression ratio of 12 to 1. As a Weber 45 DCO E13 carburetor with equal length headers.
Oh.
This thing was written by just a magician.
A wordsmith
is definitely the word for it. And it just goes on and on. It does have a little cosmetic word needed. The hood paint, almost like invariably when people buff or wax the hood of their car, the front bumper fascia that maybe is plastic gets a little rub spot on. And I see that on this, so it's a little bit of yellow underneath where the plastic is at. He says it's very solid, and for information, I could call Keith. I wanted to call Keith just to talk and just see if I could even just come by and look at the car with him. But, Daryl, I'm not going to buy the car for $13,900, but if I had a virtual garage, I'm owning this car. It's the inside has just got this cool patinaed and antique look. The stick shift on it just looks like something from the 50s. And there's probably nothing comfortable. And I really hate the station wagon look of this car.
It's weird. It's like a wedge, but not really.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even race the car. I don't even know what you do with a car like this other than stand in your garage and look at it. And maybe sometimes take it to the car show, to the Cars and Coffee. But you wouldn't take it autocross.
I bet you could. I bet you tear it up.
No, but why would you?
Why not? It's a Lotus. You're supposed to be able to knock those around.
I don't know. I don't know what you do with a car like that, but unfortunately, your kids don't want it, so you got to sell it. That's what this guy's doing right now. Sorry, Keith. I'm not buying it, but hopefully somebody else does.
What year? 72?
Yeah.
So there's a yellow one I think you and I have seen around here at a couple of shows, things like that. It comes up to about my knee.
Yeah.
The top of the roof. Yeah. Actually, no kidding. It actually does come up to like my waist. They're a very short car. But like a lot of the newer Lotuses, they just have that low slung.
They do. You know, it's funny. I bet you don't sit much different in this car as you do any modern Lotus.
No.
Like sitting on the floorboards.
No. And I didn't even know that they had a Renault motor in them. I knew nothing about that. They're neat looking cars, but doggone, they are unique.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You could road rally it. You could do.
But, I mean, he's got the number 19 on it, so it's obviously done something. Like this weekend. They're having the River Fun Run or something like that. This would be a great car for the Fun Run.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and hopefully it made it.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. A British car with a French powertrain? What could go wrong?
Exactly.
It's fine. Make sure you rewire everything.
Yeah, that orange, man. It just has like military surplus orange written all over it. I don't know. I mean, it's a cool car. It does have fresh oil and trans oil changed, by the way.
I love to. Like, here's how you know the dude's serious. What was it?
The old girl gets up and goes.
The old girl gets up and goes! Yes, exclamation point. Or like, I love to. Cosmetic work.
Yeah.
That's key for the seat's ripped.
Yeah, yeah.
It could stand a bit of polishing. I don't know why I'm making that accent.
No, but I think, honestly, it was just written so well. I know guys like this. Actually, a customer came in today who I know, he loaned me some of these racing magazines. He's from Pekin. I could see him writing this ad. And I could see the disappointment that he's not going to pass this car on to his kids.
No. That's why this may be worded that way.
Yeah,
because people read it, oh, that's neat. And then you see what he's asking. It's like, yeah, no. It's going to sit there forever and ever. But I do feel bad because something like this is unique. It's not – and I love Porsches.
Will this be like a 914 someday? Will we look back and say this 13.9 price – is a bargain.
Probably. Yeah. Because I remember like the Porsche 914, that's exactly where I was going with that. Yeah. It was the 914s back in the day. People were like, oh, that's...
Yeah, I think you jacked up the line going in.
Yeah, oh, nice. There. It was, you know, the 914, oh, that's just a Volkswagen.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, it ain't a Volkswagen.
And it got no respect in the, I'd say the early 90s, you could buy those cars for $7,000.
Even sooner, before that, in the 80s, they were worth nothing. And the sad part is now... First of all, you find a nice solid one. They're crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And people are finally – there's a guy in Morton who's got a silver one. And I remember he just got it painted, just got it restored a couple years ago. And I remember looking at that, and it was like I'd never seen it before because it was so nice and so meticulously restored. And I actually respected it. I walked up, talked to him a little bit, and he's like, yeah, I've always loved these. And people used to make fun of me. They said, why don't you get a 911? I think maybe that's true with some of these weird kind of whacked out Lotuses.
I agree. I think this car right now, I mean, I'm never going to convince the missus. Again, this is why it's Cars of the Week. I can dream about this car, and we've documented it for posterity, so
yes,
that way we'll know.
We have.
Yeah.
Good on you, Eric.
That was my virtual purchase of the week, Daryl. What do you got?
All right, I have a big bloated behemoth that is nothing like the lovely Lotus that we just heard about. I'm going to harken back to a car that I had in high school. My first love, I want to say.
That's a value.
It was a 1964 Chevy Bel Air sedan, just a big four-door. Mine was what they call Azure Aqua. It was repainted, kind of an 80s Iroquoise blue color. And it was a great little car. Got me through high school. I sold it before I went to college. Really sad, but I wasn't going to take it to college, have somebody crash it or me do something stupid with it. So I sold it. Always liked them, but never bought another one. This one popped up. Sullivan Auctioneers out in Carthage, which is past Macomb, way out in the sticks there on US 136. They actually are doing a no reserve auction this weekend. It's all online. It's like 200 cars.
COVID friendly.
it is nuts. There is some stuff out of 59 Jaguar. Like, there's all kinds of stuff. Muscle cars. And then early like Model Ts. Things that won't fetch any money. So my buddy sent me a link. He's like, dude, none of these cars are going to go for much. And I looked at it, and of all the stuff that I gravitated to, there's Packards, there's, you know, all kinds of nice high-end stuff. I look at this little homely six-cylinder, 64 Chevy Bel Air sedan. It's white, kind of a light blue interior. Looks like a nice 50,000-mile original car. And it looks like something like somebody's grandma would drive to church, or like an old farmer would have in a shed. Like, you know, good.
Is this a cop car type thing?
No, it looks like it, though. I mean, it's kind of, it's got that vibe, the dog dish caps, steel
wheels. It
looks
like, I'm trying to think, there was like a Burt Reynolds movie, Hooper. It was something where he was like running from the, broke out of prison or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And these were like the Southern Fried cop cars that were.
Was it the one he was driving? He had like a 57 Olds or something. Like, I'm going to go through Burt Reynolds stuff tonight because I vaguely remember that. But it does. It looks like an
old... Two references of Burt Reynolds tonight, sorry.
Sorry, we apparently like him. Yeah. Actually, three, because Cannonball.
Oh.
Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
No, right, three. Man. Wow. anyways, yeah. So this thing is nice. They actually... The cars from 58 to 64, the full-size Chevys, had an X frame, like a convertible does, so extra beef in the middle.
Sure, sure. Stiffen it up.
Really nice. Great ride. They really... There's nothing to them. And they make a lot of reproduction parts for them. So this thing is actually a high bid right now. It's $3,900, and that's what it's been at for 2 days.
Dude, this is – had you not had a garage full of cars, this is in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. If this thing goes for under $5,000, I'm going to be heartbroken, and I might kick a bid in for, you know, just under that.
You know, Gabe Casey was asking what you'd pay for garage space.
Dude, shout out to Gabe. Yeah, he messaged me. He's like, hey, what would you pay for storage in a building? And I'm like – what am I paying for storage, or what would I like to pay? Because I'm currently paying a lot.
Gabe has storage facilities across Peoria.
Maybe it's a next.
And don't forget, there's a Plymouth Fury we still need you to look at.
Yeah,
Beacon too.
I'll
so
pop over there. Anyways, it doesn't really make sense for me to do this right now, but I'm going to watch that auction. And shout out to my buddy Greg, who's also a bad influence on me for this type of stuff. So
yeah, appreciate good job,
that.
Greg.
Yep. But that's it. That's my car of the week. Your car of the week. And
dude, off. Yours is a bargain. Yours is $3,900. Mine was $13,900.
Well,
so.
I mean,
that just goes to show that the import car brings the premium money, and then when you go to repair it, I'll be paying five times as much for anything. The water pump on that, that Renault engine is going to cost five times what that Chevy's going
to
cost.
You probably have to ship it to France and have somebody rebuild it.
Yeah, exactly. Or this is where we're going to figure out when we can like make parts on a 3D printer of metal.
Honestly, there's probably a market for that.
Yeah,
there's about a bunch of engineers here locally that could probably fab that up. But we'll see.
Yeah, oh sure, that'd be no expense at all.
Well, kudos for selling a vehicle, as you say, and I use this phrase a lot now. Releasing one back into the wild, that's a difficult decision, and I look forward to when you bring something new home.
Well, I have another car for sale, so I'm gonna be working on that. That's my next project to sell. So it's gonna happen, Daryl.
Deets?
Oh, it's the Scion. The Scion's getting sold next.
Really?
Yeah,
you're not even gonna try?
Nah. I have $3,000 I need to invest in that Supra by the time I've done everything.
Yeah.
And the wife has made no bones about this year of COVID that I have got to make sure I cover all my debts on this car. So anyway, I didn't need to buy that car this year, but she does enjoy driving it, so I got that going for me.
Okay. All right.
So I didn't get divorced over it, but
maybe we could raffle it off.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, and so with this epic long show, you've been listening for over 90 minutes to Throwing Wrenches.
Sorry.
We do appreciate you hanging around with us. Hope you enjoyed yourself. We had a great time. Lots of stuff. We could have talked so much longer about the theft at the store, and I could have talked about Audubon so much longer. So if you want to talk about that stuff offline or you have some comments, you know, shoot us questions at info@throwingwrenches.com. And certainly keep posting on the Facebook page. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, again, we thank you.
Appreciate everything, and we'll look forward to the next time when we get together, and look forward to the next couple of months. We're going to try to line up a couple of guests and move the program forward a little bit more, and thanks to your help. Thanks for all your feedback and support.
See you later.